Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, and our next guest in the studio is Deborah Peckett Quinnen. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Deborah is with Roberto Israel and Weiner, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Radio Entrepreneurs. I know you're a return guest.
Yes,
it's always
I am.
Nice to see. Obviously, we didn't harm you too bad last time around.
It was a pleasure, and it's a pleasure to be back here. Thank you.
Wonderful to have you. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about the firm?
The firm is an absolutely terrific business law firm. We have all of the services that are required for people to run their business basically from cradle to grave, so to speak. So we begin with formation of business entities when necessary. We will do all of the corporate governance. We'll help people deal with issues that come about. For example, if they have litigation, if there are shareholder disputes, disputes with any of their clients, and we help people grow proactively and counsel them as they are in the process of considering an exit strategy. Many times we'll work with investment bankers. We have a terrific M&A practice and a terrific real estate practice that complements my practice, which is the trust and estates aspect of what a business owner needs.
So an unsolicited third-party endorsement I can provide because I have worked in many matters with attorneys in your firm and your partners, and they are all wonderful people.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your trust and estate practice.
Well, my practice fits in very nicely with the firm because one of my areas of specialty is estate planning and succession planning for the business owner. This typically arises from the very beginning of a business, whether it's a serial entrepreneur who has, maybe started businesses before, maybe sold businesses before, and then I'm doing some more advanced estate planning for them. And it goes all the way to buy-sell planning. I have recently finished an engagement with a client with a funded buy-sell agreement where we did some complex trust planning with life insurance, funding the trusts that are going to fund the buy-sell agreement, cross-purchase trusts. And that was a very, very interesting engagement and very challenging for myself in terms of keeping things understandable when I was explaining the tax concepts to the clients.
And it can become fairly complex in a hurry. Must be one of the challenges within your practice is to somebody who isn't as versed in trust to really understand the purposes and why you're structuring it the way that you are.
That's exactly right, and that's a great point. One of the things that I found many, many years ago is that the estate planning lingo is so often centered around provisions of the tax code. And the minute you mention a provision of the tax code, people's eyes glaze over, and you really lose the connection. As I mentioned last time I was on the show, one of the most important things to develop with a client is trust. And if you're talking down to a client or you're talking at a level where they're just not grasping the concepts, you're going to lose the ability to generate and to maintain that trust. So I use flowcharts to a great degree so that I can explain the concepts with pictures. And it sounds a little bit elementary, but it really isn't, because my clients are extremely intelligent. They're extremely well-versed and accomplished people for the most part. And when they don't understand some of the fundamental things that I'm describing, the flowcharts really help a great deal.
So help our listeners to understand, I think when a lot of people hear trust and estates, their eyes glaze over to some degree and they think, oh, that's for wealthy people only and I don't have to worry about that. And from my perspective as well, it may be somewhat limited, wondering about changes in tax code and the opportunities to have, I believe the exemption now is $5+ million
yes,
per individual,
is.
Up to $10 million for a couple. So we're talking people fairly substantial means. Before, and maybe that's a misnomer, before trust and estates would impact them. But why don't you tell our listeners and perhaps the layperson out there why that's not the case?
Sure. Thank you. That's a great opening. A fundamental aspect of what I do in helping people transition their assets, whether they're business assets, whether they're marketable securities, whatever they happen to own, they need a plan to transition those assets to their intended beneficiaries at their death. And they also need a plan to ensure that those assets are not jeopardized if they should become incapacitated or come up with health concerns during their lifetime. One of the overlays of this is the tax planning that you just mentioned. You're correct. There's an exemption from federal estate taxes of $5,430,000 per individual for gifts made during life, for transfers to two generations or more below the person making the gift or the bequest at death, and also for transfers at death. There are actually three transfer taxes. There's lifetime transfers for gifts, there's death time transfers for estates, And then there's a combination of gift and estate tax exemptions for generation skipping as well. What you didn't mention before is that there's also a Massachusetts estate tax. The federal estate tax exemption currently, as I mentioned, is $5,430,000 per person, but the Massachusetts exemption is only $1 million per person.
Ah, so there's tax on the incremental between the $1 million and the, or whatever the estate may be.
That's exactly
above
right.
Above $1 million.
That's exactly right. And there's also a concept called portability for the federal estate tax system, but not for the Massachusetts estate tax system. So because I come at it from a perspective of wanting to keep an estate plan as flexible as possible in light of current laws and future laws, current personal circumstances and unknown future circumstances, my documents are drafted to take advantage of current estate tax laws and will also be applicable if the current estate tax laws are rolled back, which, with an exemption as large as the federal exemption is right now, is eminently possible.
Hmm.
And I should mention as well that the federal exemption is increasing every year for inflation.
Okay.
So it is, the federal estate tax system is basically geared towards very wealthy individuals. For a married couple, you mentioned a $10,860,000 exemption for the two of them for gifts and for deaths that occur this year. And that will probably be a little bit larger next year.
And that is something that is continually on the table with Congress. I think it's a hot button, obviously. And so there is always talk about the potential of rolling it back or graduating it further. It's one of those threats out there with healthcare, I guess.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I talk about that with my clients all the time. I mean, there have been President Obama's administration in their budget proposals has proposed rolling back the federal estate tax exemption to $3.5 million. Per person. And that is what the law was in 2009 before we had the zero estate tax in 2010. So there is a possibility that the estate tax exemption will be rolled back. We don't know exactly when that's going to occur. The result of that is that I'm always advising clients who can afford to do so to do proactive planning right now, to try to move assets that are highly appreciating outside of their taxable estates. And they can do this with lifetime transfers into trusts so that the growth of those assets is outside of the estate, but those assets ultimately will benefit their children or their future descendants, as opposed to being split with Uncle Sam at the client's death.
So what is the appropriate horizon that you ask your clients to look at and to think about? You know, nobody likes to look at mortality.
Right.
And I would imagine that clients come to you at various stages of their lives, probably the first one when they have kids and
yes.
then, you know, a significant business or asset. And so those are natural life stages. But what is the typical time horizon you ask your clients to look at and to think about?
Well, most of my clients are pretty confident people. And as a result, most clients are coming at it from a
person. So they're immortal.
So they're immortal. So most of my clients, let's say clients who are maybe in their 40s, 50s, 60s, are still looking at a lot of growth in their assets from their perspective, whether it's the growth of their investment portfolios. If they have business interests, then they're looking at the growth of those business interests and how the business will appreciate in value through their hard work and the hard work of their partners as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always asking people to look forward, assuming that there's going to be growth, and I'm always asking people to review their estate plans with me every 3 to 5 years. It may be that there are no changes needed. It may be that some assets have changed substantially. And particularly, I ask people to keep in the back of their minds the estate planning impact of the sale of a business, because there can be a large, large amount of appreciation when somebody brings their business to market, particularly if they have numerous offers. So I'm always talking to my corporate partners and to my business owner clients about the value of when you start to think that you may have a sale on the horizon, or you may have another liquidity event or an appreciation event. Maybe somebody wants to make a major investment in your business, even if it's you're not selling your business completely. I ask people to take a look at what that might mean and to just give me a call, right? Just talk to me for 15 or 20 minutes,
right,
and we can determine whether it makes sense to start putting something in place currently, because if that appreciation event happens, if you do the planning well in advance, you can take advantage of built-in discounts on the value of the business interest that you're gifting to a trust for the benefit of your children.
Okay. Now, it sounds like most things in life where pre-planning has its benefits.
Yes.
How do you get clients to get over the hurdle? I mean, I know that one of the challenges probably in your field is getting people to take action. And people think about it, but oftentimes I'd imagine some sort of life event forces them to say, well, it's time for me to book that appointment and get in there.
That's exactly right. And that's a great point. That is one of the biggest challenges of my practice, because everybody that I'm working with is extremely busy, and usually they are motivated when something happens. So maybe a child of theirs is getting married or is getting a divorce, or maybe a friend of theirs has had a death in the family, and all of a sudden they start thinking about these sorts of things. So there is a group of clients that generally won't do anything until something really makes them act. I have, there's sort of another demographic among my client base of people that are extremely diligent and prudent. They're very busy, but they always make time for their estate planning because they either have seen the unexpected happen, or they simply want to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed within their own personal financial planning. And the estate planning is a huge issue. Many times, if somebody dies unexpectedly, the estate administration can be extremely complex. It can be fraught with all kinds of family disputes, particularly in second marriage situations. So the importance of a good estate plan that's well thought out, that's fully executed, and that is reviewed from time to time is very important for the basics. But the lifetime planning, that is critical as well, to try to reduce taxes and to try to create a structure for the beneficiaries that is as tax efficient and creates as much harmony as possible through the use of disinterested trustees and a lot of other aspects.
Well, and I know from personal experience that when you suffer a loss, and even though somebody tries to set up things as simply as possible, you're still negotiating an unknown.
Right.
And, you know, if somebody had the best of intentions in keeping lists of assets or things in an orderly fashion, it's complicated even then, because, you don't have the relationships they had with a banker. You don't have the relationships that they may have had with, various other service providers. And so you get forced into the quagmire of bureaucracy and uncertainty and trying to move the ball forward. And it can be a very complex and frustrating time for people. And so I'd imagine working with your clients to not only plan, but to document and to make sure that things are orderly.
Right.
Because even the most orderly people, I think, probably have some disorder in their lives.
I think that's exactly right. And you raise a great point, which is trying to plan to minimize the amount of administration at death. What we usually do when we have a client who has established trusts, part of my practice is to advise them how to title the assets that they own, not only to avoid estate taxes, which is essentially having the husband and the wife, if it's a married couple, or the husband and the husband, or the wife and the wife, retitle assets in each of their individual names so that at the first death, and you don't know who's going to die first, but at the first death, the exemptions are as fully utilized as possible for state law purposes. The other thing that I try to get people to do is to retitle assets in the names of their trusts to the extent that it's possible. We obviously can't do that with retirement plan assets or will accelerate income under current law. However, we can do that with almost every other kind of asset, provided that that doesn't violate any outside agreements, buy-sell agreements, anything like that. And we do that to avoid probate. And the reason we want to avoid probate is because at the moment of death, any assets in the decedent's individual name are frozen at that moment until somebody is appointed the personal representative of their estate. That is the only person that is authorized to act on those assets.
And that individual is typically somebody whose role it is as a trustee, as a professional trustee? Is that somebody who's appointed, or is that?
No, that's the personal representative is what we used to call the executor in Massachusetts,
right,
until the law changed a few years ago. And that is a person who is nominated in the will, if there is a will. And in Massachusetts, we also have a priority of individuals who can petition to be appointed if there is no will, an intestate estate. So the court, either way, has to appoint the personal representative. And that, depending upon the courts, that can take 2 months, that can take 3 months, that can take 4 months, even under the more simplified probate procedures that we have in Massachusetts.
So that's why people try and avoid probate, is just the length of time that it takes to unfreeze the assets and get things moving.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and I assume there's bureaucracy and cost associated with that as well.
You know, when somebody dies, the taxing authorities want a snapshot of all values as of the date of death, if we have an estate that's over and above the mass exemption amount. If we have an estate that of the first spouse to die, we also have to file a federal tax return to preserve the ability to use the first spouse's unused federal exemption in the second spouse's estate. What we have to report on the estate tax return are the values on the date of death of all the assets that the decedent owned directly and indirectly. So if you can just think about your own situation, how do you determine those values quickly? You can't. You have to get appraisers. You have to report prior gift taxes that have been filed, but you know, and some
again,
people haven't filed
gift taxes. Again, it goes back
to documentation. Exactly, right. It can be expensive. As much as somebody can plan to try to reduce probate,
it can be a costly undertaking.
It can still be costly when you take the estate taxes into account.
Excellent. Well, fascinating stuff, and I know that we can probably go on for hours and talk about it, and really love the way you've taken something that's a complex issue and brought it to make it understandable for
Thank
people.
You.
So our guest in the studio has been Deborah Peckett Quinnan from Roberto Israel & Weiner. Hopefully I got that close to
you
right.
You did.
And it's been a pleasure, and remind our listeners that are listening to Radio Entrepreneurs, and we can be heard weeknights at 6 and 9 p.m. on the Radio Entrepreneurs Network, radioentrepreneurs.com, and please go to our Facebook page, like us, follow us, etc. And Deborah, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
They can either call my firm. The firm telephone number is 617-742-4200, or they can email me directly. My email address is dq@riw.com, and I would be happy to hear from anybody.
Excellent. Well, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
And we'll be right back on Radio Entrepreneurs.